ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 5 entitled The Meeting of Nand Maharaj and Vasudev, text 9. Gopyas chakarnya mudita yashodhaya suto bhavam atmanam bhushayam chakrur वस्त्रकल्पान् जनादिभिः। ट्रांसलेशन: द गोपी वाइफ्स ऑफ द कवर्ड मैन वर वेरी प्लीज टू हियर दैट मदर यशोदा हैड गिवन बर्थ टू अ सन एंड दे बिगैन टू डेकोरेट देमसेल्व्स वेरी नाइसली विथ प्रॉपर ड्रेसेस ऑर्नमेंट्स ब्लैक ऑइंटमेंट फॉर द आईज एंड सो ऑन। देयर इज नो पर्पस फॉर दिस वर्स सो वी विल रीड ऑन। टेक्स्ट 10. नवकुंकुम किंजल का मुखा पंकज भूतया बालिबीस त्वरितम जगमो पृतु श्रोण्यास चला कुचह। ट्रांसलेशन: देयर लोटस लाइक फेस इज एक्स्ट्रॉर्डिनरीली ब्यूटिफुल बींग डेकोरेटेड विथ सैफ्रन एंड न्यूली ग्रोन कुंकुमा द वाइफ्स ऑफ द कवर्ड मैन हरीड टू द हाउस ऑफ मदर यशोदा विथ प्रेजेंटेशंस इन देयर हैंड्स। Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips and full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. Purport by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The cowherd men and women in the villages lived a very natural life, and the women developed a natural feminine beauty with full hips and breasts. Because women in modern civilization do not live naturally, their hips and breasts do not develop this natural fullness. Because of artificial living, women have lost their natural beauty, although they claim to be independent and advanced in material civilization. This description of the village women gives a clear example of the contrast between natural life and artificial life of a condemned society, such as that of the Western civilization, where topless and bottomless beauty may be easily purchased in clubs and shops and for public advertisements. The word Balibihi indicates that the women were carrying gold coins, jeweled necklaces, nice clothes, newly grown grass, sandalwood pulp, flower garlands, and similar offerings on plates made of gold. Such offerings are called Bali. The word Twaritam Jagmu indicate how happy the village women were to understand that Mother Yashoda had given birth to a wonderful child known as Krishna. ॐ अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। हरे कृष्ण। फॉर द प्यूरिफिकेशन ऑफ माय ओन सेल्फ एंड फॉर द ग्लोरिफिकेशन ऑफ द लॉर्ड आई वुड लाइक टू स्पीक समथिंग based on this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometimes services are tough. So one such service is what I'm trying to do here. The Srimad Bhagavatam at this point of time is describing the birth ceremony of Lord Krishna. And here Srila Prabhupada specifically in this purport is talking about how a natural lifestyle is healthy and how a natural lifestyle leads to real beauty. For today's session, I'm planning to discuss how when there is dependence on the Lord, the natural beauty of a person comes out. And how when somebody is independent of the Lord, how much ever beautiful a person may be, that beauty is suppressed. And that beauty is actually distorted. Specifically, we will analyze studying some pastimes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from different scriptures, and we will see how actually there is a great science behind living a natural life, and there's a great science behind living a life of dependence on the Lord. The first understanding from this comes from the story of Kardam Muni marrying Devahuti. This section of the Bhagavatam probably is one section which is very interesting, a powerful story, but at the same time filled with such realizations, especially from the purports of Srila Prabhupada, that one can probably spend a whole lifetime trying to understand what Prabhupada is trying to convey there. I'll try to narrate the story, and as we hear the story, we will also see the powerful message which is underflowing through the different lessons that Prabhupada is trying to give with context to what we are discussing today in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kardam Muni was a great saint, and he was performing tapasya for about 10,000 years. And of course, he was instructed by Lord Brahma to actually undergo this tapasya and procreate. So as an instruction and as a service, Kardam Muni decided to do 10,000 years of penance. Whether penance is for 10,000 years or whether penance is for a few hours a day, penance is worth it if it is followed by an instruction. If somebody performs penance or an austerity as a follow-up of the instruction that is given, then the penance is worth it. Otherwise, even if somebody does a penance for 60,000 years, but without the instruction of either the powerful authorities or the Supreme Lord himself, the penance practically is of no use. Vishwamitra Muni performed thousands and thousands of years of penance. But if the penance is to satisfy one's own ego, that penance becomes the greatest impediment in one's spiritual progress. Many times, because the blessings of great souls were not there in the life of Vishwamitra Muni, he had to undergo so many difficulties till he came to the point of realization that I need to surrender. And when he actually took shelter of Lord Ram, then his penance was actually fruitful. So therefore, those thousands and thousands of years of penance of Vishwamitra Muni was practically useless till the point he actually surrendered to the Lord, and then he performed tapasya. That is when the penance had a fruit. But here, Kardam Muni, because he did the other way, he was told to do penance and then he did penance. Therefore, the penance actually got fruit. And very interestingly, when Kardam Muni performed his tapasya, and finally, at the end of this 10,000 years, the Supreme Lord appeared directly in front of him. Very interesting that when the Supreme Lord appeared in front of him, the Supreme Lord started crying. Generally, when a devotee, has darshan of the Lord for the first time, there are many stories where the devotee goes so overwhelmed by the appearance of the Lord and so overwhelmed that the Lord appeared to him that the devotee starts crying. And then, there is so many ecstatic symptoms. Dhruva Maharaj could not speak. But here, very interesting that when the Lord appeared in front of Kardam Muni, the Lord started crying. Because the Lord's understanding, if you see it from the perspective of the Lord, the perspective is that the Lord is always touched when he sees the great dedication and the devotion of his devotees. Again, if you see in the Brihad Bhagavatamrit, when Gop Kumar, if you study that story, where Gop Kumar actually, after going to all the different planetary systems, when he enters into the spiritual world in Golok Vrindavan, and Gop Kumar sees Lord Krishna in front of him, Gop Kumar, of course, he feels ecstatic. But what actually makes him ecstatic is that when Krishna sees him, Krishna comes running, leaving all his friends, comes running towards where Gop Kumar is and embraces him, and Krishna starts crying tears. That That one act of the Lord convinces Gokumar that this is the highest place in the world to achieve. Because where do you find the supreme person of a particular planet coming running to the doorstep to receive somebody with genuine tears in the eyes? That is the Lord. That is Lord Krishna. And again, if you study in the Ramayana, when first time Ram is seeing Sugriva, Sugriva is a monkey. He's not even a human being who looks beautiful. And when the Lord sees Sugriva for the first time, the Lord keeps staring at him constantly. Now, if somebody is beautiful, naturally somebody feels like staring at that person. But the question is, why is Lord Ram staring at a monkey for such a long time? The monkey is not beautiful. He is not in a need of a monkey because he is the Supreme Lord himself. But why is he staring at him so much? The explanation that is given by the Acharyas is that Ram, for the first time, he's looking at a living entity who is his own servant, who is about to render service to him again. So when the Lord sees a living entity surrendering to him, that touches him the most. So here in Kardamuni's life, when the Lord sees Kardamuni, he actually starts crying. And the tears of the Lord becomes a whole lake. It's called Bindu Sarovar. And it's explained that if anyone has a dip in that lake, Bindu Sarovar, he never has to face the tears of birth and death. He never has to, you know, cry at the birth and death of himself or of anybody else. So when the Supreme Lord looks at Kardamuni, Kardamuni requests the Lord. Now this is very interesting. Here is a pure devotee whom the Lord is giving personal audience to, and what request is he placing in front of the Lord? The pure devotee, Kardamuni, he is requesting the Lord that he would like to marry a girl of like disposition to satisfy his lustful desires. Now, this is again something very, very contradictory. You achieve the Supreme Lord for something perfect. Why did, of course, now if you see it from another perspective, if you read Srila Prabhupada's purports here, Prabhupada is asking this question. Why did Kardamuni approach Krishna and why didn't he approach Goddess Uma? Because generally Goddess Uma is the one who is supposed to, you know, award a good wife. Now, why did Kardamuni not go to Uma if he wanted a wife? Why did he come to Lord Krishna? That brings the mindset of a devotee. Prabhupada writes in the purport that the advantage is that even if one has material desires, if one approaches Krishna, one will get gradually purified and one will give up hankering. Now, this doesn't happen if somebody goes to a demigod. If somebody goes to a demigod, his hankering and his desire will only increase. And here, Kardamuni is having a material desire, but he is going to Krishna for the satisfaction of that material desire. And then, the next question would be, if Kardamuni is going to Krishna, why did he ask for a material desire and why did he not ask for liberation? Now, Prabhupada brings out such a powerful understanding which only the Vedic scriptures can give. Semitic religions or religions which are very specifically goal-oriented cannot think broad. But the Vedic culture is very broad in its perspective and it is very accommodative in its range. When, you know, Prabhupada is trying to address this question, why did Kardamuni not ask for liberation and he asked for a material desire? The answer Prabhupada gives in the purport is that he says that not everyone is competent to be liberated from material bondage. This is a perspective that only a great acharya can give. Now, generally tendency of a devotee is that if you go to the Lord, you have to ask for pure devotion. Don't ask for anything less. And here is Prabhupada saying that don't expect everyone to be on that level. This is something that every preacher has to learn. And here is the Supreme Lord exhibiting that quality of a preacher, right? Generally, when a preacher is trying to preach to somebody and trying to elevate a person from whatever platform he is, his expectation is that very soon that person should be elevated to a super pure devotee platform. And generally a person who is attached to the preaching spirit, he thinks that his success means that a person becomes pure devotee, no material desires. But here is the Supreme Lord who is showing accommodation. Somebody who is approaching him for a material benediction, the Supreme Lord is shedding tears for that person, understanding that there's going to be an elevation now. There's going to be a growth now. Even Srila Prabhupada in his life, wherever Prabhupada got a chance to preach, he preached. But his expectation was according to the surrender of the person. If the person who's coming to Srila Prabhupada was not of a very high caliber, Prabhupada never had wrong expectations from him. He encouraged whatever level he is to elevate. That is something that we can learn from this particular pastime. And Prabhupada also writes in that purport that therefore, to enjoy according to one's present position, but under the direction of the Lord or the Vedas, is what is expected. That means here, Prabhupada is writing that Kardamuni was very clearly having material desires, but he was under the purview of the Lord and the purview of the Vedas. So what happens if you do that? In this particular section, the Lord is called as Shuka. The word Shuka means he's a leader of the devotee community, of the leader of religion. Now, what is the meaning of leader of religion? That means the Lord is ready to accommodate a person till to whatever level he is. And then when he surrenders to the Lord and surrenders to the Vedic process, he can elevate from there. And when somebody takes shelter of the Lord, what happens is that he is unaffected by material enjoyment, it is explained. Now, why do we say that the Lord is, somebody who takes shelter of the Lord is unaffected by material enjoyment? Kardamuni, as soon as he sees the Lord, he starts offering prayers. And one very nice, interesting prayer that Kardamuni offers is that he tells that the Supreme Lord has a wheel or a chakra. And the chakra has spokes and it has a wheel around it. And Kardamuni explains that the wheel rotates, the chakra of the Lord rotates, and the revolution of the chakra, it cuts the lifespan of the non-devotees. It cuts short. So that means the wheel of the Lord is rotating. What it is actually doing is that it is cutting through the lifespan of the non-devotees. But Kardamuni says that this wheel, this chakra, cannot touch the lifespan of a devotee. Therefore, even if a devotee is engaged in apparently material enjoyment, but if he is actually taking shelter of the Lord, then he will be unaffected by so-called externally material things. That means the Lord personally protects, because chakra is an indication of his protection. And as soon as Kardamuni prays to the Lord, he actually very frankly tells the Lord that, you know, please help me get a wife of a like-minded disposition. And then the Lord, she starts talking to Kardamuni. And very interesting, the Lord tells Kardamuni that I know what you want to ask, and therefore I've made a plan for you. And he says, very soon, Swayambhu Munu will come here with his wife, and he will get a proposal to you for marrying his daughter, Devahuti, who is a princess. Now, something very interesting in this particular section where Prabhupada is giving some comments about what is a successful married life. And Prabhupada gives a comment, some instructions and some directions of how a person should select a husband or a wife. One of the things that Prabhupada says is that, he says, it is only by the grace of the Lord that one can get a husband or a wife of the like disposition. And very interesting, Prabhupada also mentions, you see, how a pure devotee, generally we never hear Prabhupada talking at this level. Prabhupada is actually mentioning this particular purport. He says that if we pray to the Lord in every transaction of our material existence, then everything will be done very nicely and it will be just suitable for our life. And here, Prabhupada is giving a very interesting angle to what life can be. He says that we should entrust the fulfillment of our desires to the Supreme Lord. So what Prabhupada is mentioning here is that he's saying that even if we want something material, the only place and the only person who can actually fulfill our material desires also is the Supreme Lord. And then Prabhupada actually substantiated even more with a very powerful understanding. He says, Kardamuni, what he wanted from the Supreme Lord, he wanted a good wife of a like disposition. But Prabhupada is bringing on the point that the Supreme Lord gave him in marriage a princess. And Prabhupada is mentioning that when you go to the Lord with a certain expectation, the Lord will fulfill more than what you expect. And Kardamuni just expected a good wife. But here the Lord is giving him a princess. And then Prabhupada basically mentions that if we surrender to the Lord and express our desires to the Lord, we will get a greater opulence than we desire. So now, if you just analyze this whole thing, what does it bring out? It brings us one clear fact that whatever may be your lifestyle and whatever may be your needs, if your needs are expressed to the Lord is like the mother who actually fulfills your need more than your expectation, but more important than that, he will help you purify your desires. So what happened as a result of Kardamuni marrying Devahuti? What happened was that when Kardamuni married Devahuti, Devahuti proved to be a person, a wife, who could actually assist Kardamuni in elevating himself in his spiritual understanding. If you read that section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there was only a small phase of time where Kardamuni and Devahuti were actually enjoying. But after that, if you study the remaining section, the whole life practically they led a life of renunciation and focus on the Lord. As soon as Devahuti had children, Kardamuni walked off and he went to perform his tapasya with detachment. And Devahuti, she gave birth to the Supreme Lord who gave unlimited instruction to all of us. So here is a combination of a husband and wife who are of like disposition, but at the same time, their focus is on the Supreme Lord. And because they are of the like disposition and the focus on the Supreme Lord, when they come together, that marriage is centered around Krishna. And that marriage is not a marriage of infatuation, not a marriage of externals, not a marriage of artificial interests, but rather a marriage of meaning. So again, if you study another section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is meeting Kubja. When Krishna walks into the Mathura, in this particular pastime, it is explained that, of course, the background behind Kubja is that Kubja is a partial incarnation of Satyabhama. Satyabhama is Bhudevi, you know, the person who is personification of the earth planet. And Bhudevi at that point of time, because of Kamsa and all these powerful demons, Bhudevi was burdened. And because she was burdened, she was bent down. So Kubja, you'll find, because you know she's hunchbacked. Why she's hunchbacked? Because she's a representation of the earth and the earth is burdened. And Krishna, by lifting Kubja and making her straight, gave an indication that I've come to relieve of the earth of all the burdens and straighten everything. And some very interesting things come out in this interaction of Krishna with Kubja. Here, one of the instances, of course, we know Govardhan Leela. Govardhan Leela is one pastime where Krishna exhibited all seven, you know, all the five rasas together in one instance. But here is another instance where Krishna is exhibiting two rasas together. He is exhibiting the Sakya ras and Hasya ras along with his friends. And he's also exhibiting Madhurya ras simultaneously, you know. So very interesting. So when Krishna meets Kubja, he sees that she's hunchbacked, she's looking ugly, and she's also called Trivikra. Trivikra means somebody who's bent in three places, you know. And because she's so odd looking and she's carrying some cosmetics in her hand, ointments to King Kamsa. So Krishna starts, you know, joking with her. He calls her, oh beautiful lady. And he calls her, you know, many adjectives which he's describing her beauty. Actually, it is that particular section has two meanings. One meaning is that to his friends, it was a joke. You know, calling somebody who is ugly, very beautiful, it is a joke for friends. And generally, the hasya ras is that when a friend is in the mood of joking, whatever you say, people laugh. You know, we have experiences that whenever somebody is in hasya ras, whatever the person says, now people start laughing. But here, Krishna is exhibiting this hasya ras and he's, you know, apparently cracking some jokes at the cost of somebody else, but it causes great laughter among the friends. And Kubja, on the other hand, all the comments of Krishna, it is straight hitting her heart. You know, she's experiencing Madhuri Ras. And Krishna's exhibition of rasa increases unlimitedly when talk is there, when speech is there, that is one level of rasa. But when there is touch, the rasa increases more. So Krishna here, he is telling Kubja that I'll make you straight. Of course, he tells Kubja that why don't you give all these cosmetics to us? She tells him, I'm taking for King Kamsa. But then immediately when she hears the words of Krishna, she becomes very affected. She says, you two deserve the best of cosmetics. And she applies all the cosmetics on Krishna and Balramji. And then Krishna is very pleased with her attitude. So he tells her, I'll straighten you. And he keeps his feet on the legs of Kubja. And he keeps his hand on the chin of Kubja. And he lifts. And instant plastic surgery. And without any instruments, without anything. Probably, you know, if you analyze, there are many people who treat spondylitis, treat the back using natural remedies. Originator is Krishna. And when Krishna straightened Kubja, for the friends it was a great joke. Because, you know, the friends didn't realize that actually she's going to become beautiful. For the friends, they thought that Krishna is cracking a joke, you know, trying to fool with her. But then when she actually became beautiful, the touch of Krishna increased the unlimited desires in Kubja's heart. And she expressed her Madhuri Ras. The understanding from this particular pastime is very interesting. How we can see it from the particular purport point of view, from today's verse point of view. It's explained that Kubja, as soon as she did service to the Supreme Lord, as soon as she served the Supreme Lord, all her defects disappeared. This is a result of serving the Supreme Lord. And all of us, in one sense, are very much like Kubjas because each of us have some defect which is a bent in our devotional life, which is a bent in our attitude towards devotees, which is a bent in our attitude towards service itself. And this is a bent in our attitude towards performing pure devotional service. And Krishna, by, you know, removing the bends of Kubja, indicated that as soon as one renders pure, unmotivated service to the Supreme Lord, all his bends get straightened. So this is what is the result of service. The result of service is that one's real beauty gets revealed. One's inner beauty gets revealed. And very interesting, Krishna kept one foot on Kubja's legs and he used the other, his hands to lift her. That indicates that the process of beautification, the process of purification and the process of becoming beautiful in the eyes of the Lord is a painful process. Krishna kept his feet on Kubja's feet, which can be painful. When Krishna presses his feet on anything that can potentially be a disastrous episode, when Shakatasur, Krishna's one touch of his feet, the whole demon was destroyed. The whole cartload filled with so many things destroyed. With one press of Krishna's feet, Arjuna's chariot went into the ground and he was saved from the arrow of Karna. So if Krishna wants to use his feet in a heavy way, it can really be painful. So when Krishna pressed Kubja on her feet, that indicates that the process of disciplining can be a painful process. And unless there is disciplining, what does, you know, keeping the feet on her feet indicate? It indicates that Krishna grounds a person. That means one has to be ready for purification and for the pain of discipline to actually become beautiful. And with the other hand, he lifted her up. And the lifting of her, erecting of her back, it indicates that the process of anartha nivritti is actually the process of straightening, removing distortions. So anartha nivritti is a process where all our distortions are straightened by the Lord. The six anarthas which is there and filled in everyone's heart is actually bending us in sixfold forms. You know, oh, I don't know what you call it. Trivikra was only threefold bended, but all of us, Shatavakra, we are bent in six forms. And the purification is the process where the anartha nivritti is removed, is the process where Krishna is slowly pulling us out from each of these six anarthas till our back becomes straight and our internal beauty gets revealed to the world. And the process of purification for Kubja was an instant because the Supreme Lord is personally present. Because we don't perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord directly in front of us, our process of purification is longer. Katwang Maharaj, in one moment he got purified of all his anarthas and went back to the spiritual world. But because the perceiving of the power of the Supreme Lord is not there, when we chant the holy name, the Supreme Lord is present personally. But unfortunately, being conditioned, we are not able to perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the purification takes the longer period of time. And, you know, when Krishna actually completely straightened her, that actually indicates that Krishna consciousness is a process where finally the inner beauty gets revealed externally also. Therefore, the pure devotees of the Lord, if you see them, if you study their demeanor, study their behavior, you can actually understand what is going to be in the spiritual world, our expectations. And we can understand what will happen to us if we actually get purified completely of all anarthas. That's what Kubja indicates finally when her beauty was revealed. And now, if you compare the beauty of Kubja and the interaction of Kubja with Lord Krishna with the interaction of Mantra with Lord Ram, it's very interesting. Mantra was also a hunchback lady, but her hunchback never got straightened because she felt that the way to beautify herself is to keep Ram away. And actually it is explained in the Ramayana that when Lord Ram was sent on exile and Bharat was supposed to be coronated the king, of course Kaikeyi was extremely pleased with Mantra because Mantra poisoned her. Kaikeyi actually promised Mantra that if what you say actually happens and my son becomes the king, I will make sure that your whole back, your whole hunchback is decorated with gold ornaments. You know, that is the promise that Kaikeyi gave to Mantra. Which indicates that for a person who is materially minded, like what Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here, who is attached to just artificial beauty, for him or her, beauty lies in external decoration, but not in internal decoration. So Kaikeyi promised her external decoration, but Krishna gave Kubja internal decoration. And because her internal was purified, externally she became beautiful. But Kubja, Mantra tried the other way, trying to become beautiful by externally decorating herself. But actually, if you read Shatrughna and Bharat, when they come back from the grandparents' house, when they see Mantra, something very interesting. They see Mantra, she is decorated beautifully with lipstick and, you know, generally, if you see a monkey being decorated, how does a monkey look? You know, just put a lipstick on a monkey, how does it look? So the description of the Ramayana is that Kubja was completely filled with gold all over. Now, somebody who doesn't understand value, doesn't know what real beauty means, na, they just think that too much, you know, overloading with gold is a sign of beauty. Actually, that shows how a person can be so affected in his consciousness that he doesn't understand what beauty is only. So when Shatrughna saw Mantra, it is explained that Shatrughna actually thought that there was a monkey covered with gold. He actually expressed it. And then Shatrughna, he was so angry with Mantra, with what she did, that he actually dragged her all over the palace. And all the gold that she was wearing was thrown here and there. And she was crying in pain, extremely. Why? This is the stubbornness of a living entity who is not ready to surrender to the Lord. The stubbornness of a living entity who is ready to exile the Lord from his life, thinking that without the Lord, his plans will give him beauty. So Mantra ended up in a great amount of suffering and misery. And the poison within her heart came out in the form of words, which affected Kaikeyi. And the words that came out from Kaikeyi's mouth affected Dasharatha's mind. And because Dasharatha's mind was polluted, his decision was bad. And because his decision was bad, it again directly affected Mantra's life. And Mantra was practically going to be killed at that point of time. The only reason Bharat didn't kill Mantra, he was actually had his sword drawn to kill Mantra. The only reason he didn't kill Mantra is that he felt if Ram comes to know that I've killed her, Ram will be displeased. So the only reason that her life was saved is because of the same person whom she banished. So unless we feel the presence of the Lord in our lives, we can never attain real beauty. And these two pastimes very clearly indicate that. And another thing that Srila Prabhupada brings time and again in his purports is that when a devotee is not conscious of the power of the external energy, the illusory energy, he becomes very much bewildered, thinking that his personal endeavor will help him attain Krishna consciousness. If you just analyze how even the powerful devotees of the in our line will actually show conscious of Maya, it will actually help us. The four Kumaras eternally remain five-year-old children. Why? Fearful of Maya. This Shukadeva Goswami, 16 years he didn't come out from the womb of his mother. Why? Fearful of Maya. Srila Prabhupada, praying to the Supreme Lord, please protect me from Maya. Why? Because he is understanding the power of Maya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself feared even the form of wooden doll. Why? Supreme Lord, what is it to fear? To show us how we had to be fearful of Maya. And if we study from these instances, we understand how careful we need to be. But if you're careful, but at the same time, if you're not surrendered to the Supreme Lord, again, there is no hope. I'll end with one very nice story from the Puranas. The story indicates how if a person actually takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, even unconsciously he can get benefited. But if he consciously takes shelter of the Supreme Lord, 100% he gets benefited. There was a man who was a very low-cultured man. This is how the Puranas describe. And what was he doing, to say that he was low-cultured? It is explained that he was waiting for his girlfriend with a flower bunch. So one day when he was waiting, it started raining very, very heavily. And then because of the heavy rain, naturally his girlfriend didn't turn up. And suddenly when he was moving around, he had a flower bundle in his hand. But he started drowning in a river. And while he was drowning, he was thinking that anyway I'm going to die, let me offer these flowers to Krishna. And he chanted, Narayana Arpanamastu, he chanted, and he died. And then he went, Yamaraj came and took him to the hellish planets. But before they took him to the hellish planets, he gave him a glimpse of the Nandakanana gardens in the heavenly planets. So he asked Yamaraj, why did you get me here? If you're taking me to the heavenly, to the hellish planets. He said, you offered that flower in the last moment of your life, so you deserve a glimpse. So you're showing him a glimpse. So he was there for a moment in that Nandakanana gardens. So this man, he took out the sword of one god who was standing there. And he started cutting all the flowers in the garland. And he started chanting the names of Lord Vishnu. Vishnu Arpanamastu. He started shouting. And then after that, he stood still. Then Yamaraj's servants were bewildered. What to do with this person now? Because now we can't take him to the hell. And then he went back to the spiritual world. This is the greatness of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthar Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.